You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow after 6 on The Morning Show, John Munson and his guest mark the 10th anniversary of the Little Free Library, created here in Wisconsin and spreading around the country. That's tomorrow morning at 6 here on the Ideas Network. Now, the Trump administration continues to make a push for returning astronauts to the moon, only now it wants to get there sooner. Originally, the NASA budget called for a lunar landing in 2028. This week, the White House asked Congress for more money to speed up that timetable. Now they're aiming for 2024. At a summit in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine said the goal is actually bigger than the moon.
We're going to the moon because we want to get to Mars with humans. If we want to learn more than we've ever learned before about Mars, we need to get there with humans.
So why the quest to get to the moon and Mars? Robert Walker is a former Republican congressman from Pennsylvania. He chaired the House Science, Space, and Technology Committee and the President's Commission on the Future of the U.S. Aerospace Industry. He's now the CEO of Moonwalker Associates, which lobbies for space and technology clients. He also wrote a piece for The Hill about why he supports the President's call for a space force to protect the U.S. from attacks in orbit. We'll get to that in a moment as well. Mr. Walker, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Sure. Nice to be with you.
Let's start with this idea of bringing people back to the moon. It's been quite a long time, almost 5 decades. Why now go back?
Well, because what we're learning about the moon is that the resources there may benefit us tremendously here on Earth, and certainly will benefit us as we go out to explore the rest of the solar system. Remember, the president's mission here is even bigger than Jim Bridenstine talked about. In the president's campaign, his policy was that we would explore the entire solar system with humans within the century. And so this is a very expansive view of what we need to do in the future, and it starts with the moon.
Now, a common argument against this kind of exploration is that, yes, it sounds nice, but we've got bigger priorities. The money could be better spent within Earth's atmosphere. What do you say to that concern?
Well, that's always the case, that somebody wants to spend the money right here, right now, instead of looking into the future. I think that's penny wise, pound foolish. When you look back at the moon program, it paid anywhere from 7 to 1 to 40 to 1 back to our economy for what we did in the previous moon program that landed the Apollo astronauts. Those figures depend upon who's calculating them. But there's no doubt that there was a huge help to our economy. Much of what we do now with miniaturization of technology started as a result of what we had to do in order to get to the moon. We have learned so much more about our universe because of the new techniques that we built during the moon program. We know that the technology that we used to go to the moon also helped us then build the space shuttles and move to a space station. That space station is now doing tremendous work in medical research and in materials research that may result in huge breakthroughs in both of those areas. And so this is not just about the future. It's about what we get back in our economy and in our lives today.
Now, what do you think about timeline? That NASA budget submitted in March, $10.7 billion for an exploration campaign that includes a moon landing in 2028. This week's request now, $1.5 billion plus to bump that up to 2024. Is it worth paying extra to bump it up by 4 years?
Yeah, it definitely is, because what we've learned about the NASA programs is that if you don't get them completed within one administration, the chances are that a new administration comes in, revises the programs, and then what you do is you end up stretching them out. We've been building a system called the Space Launch System, which is a massive rocket that started back as a part of a program in 2006, and we still haven't flown it. Meantime, companies like Blue Origin and SpaceX are much closer. SpaceX flies the rockets now. Blue Origin is in the process of building very large spacecraft that they're going to fly. It hasn't taken them 20 years to get there, or in this case, 15 years. We have a James Webb telescope that we started working on back when I was still in the Congress. That's over 21 years ago. And we still haven't flown the James Webb Telescope. And so what you've got to have is you've got to have a program that an administration commits itself to and finishes inside that administration.
Talking to former Congressman Robert Walker about U.S. space policy, efforts to get to the moon by 2024, people on Mars after that. And, Mr. Walker, let's talk about now the military and space, the president calling for a separate, distinct military command to handle operations and security in space. What do you see? You've written in favor of this. What do you see of the benefits of, you know, taking it out of the control of the Air Force and other agencies?
Well, it'll be a force that focuses exclusively on the space matters. Right now, we don't have one of our military branches that focuses exclusively there. Each of the military branches sees space as a tremendous asset to them. They see it as absolutely essential to their mission, but their mission is not space. Their mission is air, land, or sea. And so they don't focus exclusively there. What we know now is that we're at war every day in space. We have satellites chasing satellites in space. We have our adversaries developing offensive weapons and defensive weapons in space. We know that what we need to have is an ability to have an asymmetric advantage when we go to war and when we have emergencies arise. And our adversaries are trying to take that away from us. We need a force that's organized and equipped and trained to do the space mission.
We heard on Facebook from Brandy. Brandy writes, if the military protects our land, air, and water, a space force implies that space is ours to protect. What do other countries think of this? Brandy asks. So we don't. There aren't borders in space. Do we have the authority, the legitimacy to militarize in space?
Well, there aren't borders on the sea either, and we have had a Navy that has done international work from the very beginning of it. And some of the things that apply to the law of the sea also will apply to space. And what we're defending out there is the assets which we have put into space. We're defending our own assets in space. We're not trying to claim all of space for the United States.
Now, what, on a practical level, would a space force look like? Clearly, it would not be people, for the most part, in orbit itself. This would be work done from the ground.
Right. It's going to be a reasonably small force, and that's one of the criticisms is, why do you need a force that it would be so much smaller than, for instance, the Coast Guard or the Marines? And the answer is because these are highly trained technical people. They are people who we don't need vast numbers of, but we need the very skills that they possess. And allowing them to focus on that mission and that mission alone will assure that we have the right kind of activity in space.
We're talking about Trump administration policies for space, Earth's orbit and beyond with Robert Walker, a former Republican congressman from Pennsylvania, chair then of the House Science, Space and Technology Committee. He's now a lobbyist for space and technology clients. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Should the United States be trying to land people on the moon again as soon as 6 years or so from now? Is it a worthwhile mission? What do you think about President Trump's call for a separate military command to deal with issues in Earth's orbit? Do we need that? Is it okay as it is? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about President Trump's space policy priorities with Robert Walker, a former congressman who chaired the House Science, Space, and Technology Committee. He also chaired the President's Commission on the Future of the U.S. Aerospace Industry. You can join in at 800-642-1234. The president and others making the case that we need to land people on the moon again, one step on the way to having people go to Mars in the future and maybe beyond. What do you think about that? And what do you think about the idea of a new military command? The president has called it a space force to deal with concerns, issues in Earth's orbit. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page with this separate military command. Mr. Walker, some in Congress have raised concerns, not so much about the mission, but about the costs, the idea of creating a new separate bureaucracy, the Congressional Budget Office saying, hey, this is going to cost more than the White House is saying. What would you say to those your colleagues now, your present colleagues in Congress?
Well, we have a $19 trillion economy, which is at risk because we are not adequately protecting our assets in space. This amount of money would amount to about, even if you take the biggest number that the Congressional Budget Office came up with, it would amount to about 0.7% of the money that we spend on defense. Now, you know, if we can't afford that to protect a $19 trillion economy, we're in pretty sad shape.
Now, we heard from Amber on Facebook. She writes, as a science fiction enthusiast, I like the idea. She's talking about the military command here. As a taxpayer and someone who's concerned with rising tensions between the countries, I'm pessimistic about how the program would be applied by our government and how the rest of the world perceives it. So concerns about an arms race in space, in part if we have this separate military command devoted to orbital operations.
Well, there's already an arms race in space. As I said earlier, we have satellites chasing satellites. We have anti-satellite weapons. Our adversaries, Russia and China in particular, are putting offensive weapons into space. All of this is taking place as we speak. Space has become a combat zone. And so we need to recognize that in our own policies. The fact is that we are the most prominent nation in space. Our adversaries would like to take that away from us. And I'm old enough to remember when Sputnik went up and we panicked as a nation because the Russians had put this small satellite into space. Imagine what we'll have if the Chinese land on the moon and claim the moon, because we don't have a lot of laws at the present time. The people who get there first may well be able to claim it. We didn't do that when we went, but the Chinese well could do that in the future.
Along those lines, do you think that there needs to be more work in the international community to try to set up laws that govern who can claim what and do what in space, in the orbit, on the moon and beyond?
I absolutely do. I think we ought to have some international agreements about the behavior of people who are spacefaring nations, about how the laws govern people who are no longer a part of a defined national territory. There are all kinds of things that we should do, and we probably ought to use the law of the sea as a starting point and then develop a law that recognizes that we have now gone beyond our own planet.
When it comes to long-term planning for space policy, as you mentioned, each new administration kind of shakes up the timetables and agendas. Do you see the possibility of some bipartisan work in Congress to set a longer-term policy that maybe whoever the next president is could get behind?
Well, I would hope so. And I think the last couple of presidents, at least, have hoped that they had done that. And then it simply fell apart. And the next administration went its own way. I think one of the reasons why you want to get to the moon and establish a permanent presence there is that that pretty much assures that you're going to have to keep that in place. It's happened with the space station. Once the space station was being built and once it was finished, each administration has committed the resources necessary to keep the space station operating. And so the reason to get something done is because it becomes a part of our permanent space establishment then.
Now, you've been in Congress. You see how Congress is working today or not in some cases. Are you optimistic that there will be agreements reached on things like the NASA funding the president is looking for and on the creation of a separate military command for space?
Well, I think that's an open question at this point. I think it's going to be very difficult to get some of the money that that NASA is looking for. Hopefully, people will recognize that this is a mission that really does speak to the future. On the Space Force side, I think Congress is probably going to develop some kind of a Space Force policy. I don't think it will necessarily track exactly what the administration has proposed, but I think at the end of the day, the recognition of how serious the problem is that we have will cause the Congress to recognize the need to put a Space Force in place.
In our last few moments, we're talking the moon in maybe 5 or 10 years, depending on which plan we go with. Do you have thoughts on a timetable for people on Mars?
Well, I don't think that that will happen before the 2030s. I think we're probably at least that far away. What you don't have in the calculation is some people may decide to go there, whether the government decides to go there or not. I mean, Elon Musk is developing a huge rocket called the Starship that he intends to use to go to Mars. Who knows? He may get there before NASA has a program to do so. Jeff Bezos with the Blue Origin company is developing a couple of huge rockets that are capable certainly of going to the moon, and which is his prime goal, but ultimately could also be used as Mars vehicles.
We'll leave it there for now. Mr. Walker, thanks for joining us today.
Sure. Nice to be with you.
It's Robert Walker, former Republican congressman from Pennsylvania. He chaired the House Science, Space, and Technology Committee and the President's Commission on the Future of the U.S. Aerospace Industry. He's now a lobbyist for space and technology clients. Talked to them about the President's call for the U.S. to return to the moon in 2024. And he also made the case for the President's proposed Space Force as a necessary step to keeping America safe. Wisconsin is known far and wide for its beer culture, and in recent years, Wisconsin's political culture has gotten a lot of national attention, too. But as Brady Carlson reports for our series High Tolerance, beer culture has long been a part of Wisconsin politics.
Milwaukee was in the mood to celebrate the day Democratic Party Chair Tom Perez came to announce the city would host the 2020 Democratic National Convention. The celebration was very Wisconsin, a beer toast. Only as the glasses clinked together and cameras clicked, things got messy. They spilled beer on the paperwork. Not intentional, but for those in Wisconsin politics, also not surprising.
It's a shorthand and quick way to convey something by having a beer.
That's political scientist Mordecai Lee of UW-Milwaukee. He says for out-of-state politicians looking to show they're in touch with Wisconsin culture, a beer is a way to do it.
You know, it's not that different from, I don't know, campaigning in Chicago and having a Chicago hot dog or a deep dish pizza. For politicians, the sort of simplistic, stereotypical instant messaging that happens with a photo op with beer, they continue doing it.
National figures have done it a lot. Hillary Clinton, John Kerry, and First Lady Betty Ford, just to name a few. The pictures of candidates raising glasses of Wisconsin beer are a timeline of American politics. Lee points to a visit from Ronald Reagan, who used his beer photo op to make a point to the state's conservative voters.
Sitting next to him is the police chief of Milwaukee, who was identified with conservative politics, even though he personally was a civil servant and couldn't do an endorsement. And here was a situation where Ronald Reagan was able to convey several things at the same time.
In-state politicians recognize the value of a campaign beer, too, though their take on the tradition is perhaps less cynical.
On the national level, having a beer with a politician is a cliche. In Wisconsin, having a beer with a politician is a way of life.
That's Brian Reisinger, who worked on campaigns for top state Republicans like U.S. Senator Ron Johnson and former Governor Scott Walker. He says on the campaign trail, you go where people are. Festival beer tents, breweries, bars, even tailgate parties outside Lambeau Field.
It's kind of hard to take part in the beer on a setting like that because you're warm and you've got hours of walking to do and it could go badly for you. But you get cheersed a lot. You get a lot of toasts.
And you can get a lot of attention, like when Ron Johnson's campaign released a video of the senator partaking in...
It was a chug.
Johnson downed a Miller Lite in seconds, apparently impressing the bartender.
That's pretty good.
And getting plenty of attention in news and social media, the kind of attention Reisinger says campaigns dream about.
It was one of those moments where it didn't really matter what your politics were. You just were like, hey, that's cool. That senator just slammed a beer like my buddy would on Friday night. And it was a way for people to relate to him. And it was the best thing about it was a real moment. We never could have scripted or come up with it. It just happened.
Bridging political divides with beer doesn't always work. Judging by the protests outside the bipartisan Beer and Brat Summit Governor Scott Walker held after the 2012 recall campaign. And pouring a beer can backfire, as Hillary Clinton learned during a 2016 primary event. Tammy Plourd of Pearl Street Brewery in La Crosse was there.
You know, I kind of gave her the lowdown. You know, you got to pull the tap handle all the way forward. You can't half do it. But she just didn't pull the tap handle all the way forward, and that just created a lot of foam.
The campaign trail increasingly runs through craft breweries like Pearl Street. Candidates can pay tribute to Wisconsin's beer history and highlight small businesses at the same time. But craft beer is growing across the country. Will Wisconsin's blend of beer and politics still stand out? Tammy Plourd says yes, because to her, these moments aren't just about the beer.
Wisconsin's very good at being down home, very relatable, very friendly, and we just kind of want to experience all that together. And I think Wisconsin will always stand out for that.
And if that doesn't work and the beer and politics connection goes out of state, Mordecai Lee has an idea to keep candidates coming here.
I'm guessing the incoming product that's going to replace it is going to be cheese. After all, we're already called cheeseheads, and our motto is America's Dairyland.
If nothing else, you can't quite spill cheese on a contract the way you can with a beer. Brady Carlson, WPR News.
You can read more about this story and see the rest of our series, High Tolerance, at WPR.org/alcohol. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, a bunch of states have passed new high-profile restrictions on abortion with an eye toward the courts and legal precedent for the future. Look at the history and politics of abortion laws and how the latest news fits in. In our continuing series on alcohol in the state, we'll look at the human cost of drunk driving crashes. And it's this week's edition of Food Friday. We'll get the inside story on buttermilk and how we can use it for lots and lots of different recipes. It has a million uses, or so I'm told. I'll be educated tomorrow on Food Friday. That and look at some of the top news stories from around the state. It's coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.